This week on Vox Talks, at the end of our lives, how much do we pay for medical care? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. In a recent Vox Talk, we spoke to David Bloom about the economics of ageing. And one of the important topics that we only had a little time to touch on is what happens close to the end of our lives. So how much do we pay for medical or palliative care in our final years and months? Who pays for it? Is the system fair? Eric French of UCL, he's also a CEPR fellow, joins me to talk about this today. He's one of the authors of a new paper that documents end-of-life medical expenses, focusing particularly on the US, but with comparisons to other countries. And he looks in detail at these and other questions. Eric, welcome to Vox Talks.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
Death is an emotive topic, Eric, and some people would say that it's beyond the scope of economics. Is it?
I don't think so. Certainly, death and the process of dying, it has ethical and moral issues that are beyond the scope of economics. But it's important to remember that governments are heavily involved in the process of death and dying in terms of their funding decisions. An important aspect of this is the process by which governments pay for medical care near the end of people's lives. There's lots of important decisions that governments make, and these decisions likely impact the decisions that those dying and their families wind up making. So for this reason, I think that economists actually have a lot to say about the process of death and what should governments do to provide for the well-being of those dying as well as their families.
It's very salient at the moment, isn't it? Because so many more of us are going to suffer from, and eventually many will die from, chronic conditions, and they require medical care over an extended period. So how has this changed over recent years?
Death via chronic conditions has become more important over time. In the United States, the top three causes of death are all from chronic conditions. In 2000, the top three killers in the United States were all chronic conditions: heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. Contrast that with the three major causes of death in 1900. And at that point in time, none of the major causes of death were from chronic conditions. And so this has meant that the process of death has often moved from a relatively quick process to a more lengthy process that potentially needs more care.
You're adding up the cost of end-of-life care, caring for these conditions and others. What do you include in that, and what qualifies as end-of-life?
Right. So what it qualifies as end of life, in terms of what we have done and what lots of papers in the literature have done, is to measure things in terms of the last 12 months of life. Because chronic conditions are also very important, lots of papers, including some of our own research, uses a three-year horizon. For many countries, we actually now have very good information on total medical expenditures. And by that, we mean including hospital care, doctor visits, pharmaceuticals, as well as long-term care in terms of nursing homes, assisted living facilities, as well as sometimes hospice care, which we do actually have for the U.S.
Do you impute a cost for care within the family?
We have not. Some other papers have tried to do this because, as you might guess, an important cost is the foregone earnings of family members who are providing that care. Actually, as it turns out, some estimates suggest that much more is actually spent in terms of foregone earnings providing for these family members than is actually paid for in terms of formal long-term care for those who are in very severe health problems or having very severe health problems.
So the big question, how much does end-of-life care cost?
So excluding what households are paying in terms of foregone earnings, for the United States, it's about $80,000 in the final 12 months of life. Now, we've done this for multiple countries, actually. And in all countries, end-of-life spending in terms of the final 12 months, it accounts for about 10% of total medical expenditures. The U.S. is actually towards the bottom at 8.5%. So for some individuals, they might actually find this a bit surprising because It's often been speculated that for the U.S., part of the high cost of medical care is very large expenditures towards those near the end of their lives. In terms of dollars spent, the United States spends more. But if you look at it as a share, it's actually lower than lots of other countries. And of course, that's just because the U.S. spends so much on all types of care.
The U.S. has the reputation for taking heroic measures to keep extremely sick people alive.
Right. And that's certainly the case. However, as it turns out, lots of countries are spending lots towards the end of people's lives. Part of this is because it's not just a few incredible treatments that those near death are receiving. It's coming from lots of different things. It's coming from the hospital stays, but also long-term care facilities and just lots of different things. And whether it's the United States or Denmark or Britain, lots of these decisions are actually fairly similar that these countries are making. It's just that for the U.S., everything seems to cost a little bit more.
And what makes up that $80,000? In what proportion?
Two key expenditure items. The main one in the U.S. is hospital care. So that is about $35,000 in the final year of life. And that comes from all payers, whether it's individuals paying out of pocket, private insurers, or the government. The second biggest component, that happens to be long-term care. And by that, we mean nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and the like. And that's about $20,000. The rest is lots of little things, doctor visits, hospice care, pharmaceuticals, and the like.
The conventional wisdom about this is that end-of-life care soaks up a huge amount of funding, maybe a huge amount of a family's resources, and that this problem is getting exponentially worse. From what you've said so far, it doesn't sound like this is quite true.
It's not quite true. It happens to be the case that 10% of aggregate medical expenditures is a lot of money. That's about 1% of GDP. That's pretty close to what lots of countries spend in terms of providing for all unemployment insurance benefits. So it's a lot of money, but just as a share of total medical expenditures, it's 10%. It's non-trivial. If you look at a three-year range, it's more like 20%. Again, the final year is the most expensive, but just because lots of people are dying from issues such as these chronic conditions that often consume lots of resources over a relatively long time span, 20% sort of makes sense if we want to think about 3 years. But again, it's not the major component. And furthermore, it actually doesn't seem as though end-of-life care is becoming a bigger share of total medical expenditures either. So it's growing, but so are total medical expenditures. And it seems as though the share spent on that last either 1 year or 3 years of life, there's no strong trend.
Because you would think if more people are dying slowly rather than from influenza or from infections, that of course it must be a larger proportion of health spending. But as you're saying, people are spending more on health in earlier parts of their life as well, I guess.
Right. And furthermore, I should add that we don't know the shares, of course, in the year 1900. What we know is what has happened, say, over the last 30 years or so. And at least over the last 30 years, it doesn't seem like there's been a big trend.
What comes across strongly is that countries that have similar types of economies and similar levels of wealth, similar health services as well, they have very different ways of funding end-of-life care. Does it have different outcomes?
For lots of medical types of care, most countries pay for close to 100% of the cost of medical care. However, for long-term care services, there's incredible diversity of arrangements across countries. So, for example, in the Netherlands and also lots of Scandinavian countries, the government will pay for close to 100% of the cost of this long-term care.
Can we say what long-term care is?
Right. So long-term care, let's think of that as both being formal long-term care facilities, but also other facilities such as perhaps home help and things like that. And so for countries such as the Netherlands, virtually 100% of the cost is paid for by the government. In the United Kingdom and also in the U.S., if an individual happens to be relatively high wealth, the cost of that long-term care will largely be paid out of pocket. If they wind up being financially destitute, which might happen after an extended nursing home stay, then the government will step in and pay. However, there is this amazing thing that for most goods, governments usually pay maybe a small bit or not at all. For long-term care, some governments are paying 100%. For other countries, the government is paying close to zero, at least for high-wealth individuals. And so it raises really interesting questions about what types of countries actually have it right. Of course, as the government winds up funding a bigger share, there's what we often refer to as moral hazard issues, the fact that households will wind up consuming more of these services. However, because end-of-life care and these long-term care issues can be so incredibly expensive, they can completely financially decimate households. Just to get back to this issue about moral hazard, for example, the Netherlands, which does provide close to 100% of the cost of these long-term care facilities, you'll be unsurprised to hear that the country of the Netherlands spends a lot more than, for example, the United States or the United Kingdom on long-term care. In fact, at one point, the Netherlands was spending close to as much on long-term care as it was on education.
Wow.
Which is pretty remarkable.
That's a very large amount. And do we have evidence that in other countries that people are planning and saving for the sort of care that they're going to need at the end of their life?
So what we know is in countries such as the United States, out-of-pocket medical spending in the final year of life, it averages about $10,000. However, for many households who wind up in long-term care facilities, their expenditures are much higher. So for this reason, we might think that many households are saving to insure themselves against the risk of living long and having catastrophically high medical spending. It's very difficult to actually assess how important this savings motive is. What we do know is from surveys, the elderly actually often list this precautionary savings motive as an important driver of their savings decisions. Furthermore, what we know is from other surveys, sometimes called strategic surveys, where people are asked hypotheticals about how much they would save versus spend in different contingencies in terms of their health states. It does seem as though people are very strongly motivated to hold on to savings in order to insure themselves against that risk of winding up in a nursing home. And in the case of the United States or the United Kingdom, perhaps a nursing home that is government funded, but of somewhat lower quality.
One thing we will know about this is the difference in approach and a difference in people's attitudes to this. It's going to have distributional consequences across the society, isn't it?
Absolutely. In terms of the way things work for the United States and the United Kingdom, it is very interesting that, of course, those at the very top of the wealth distribution, they can go to the finest nursing homes, really just wonderful experiences, or at least as wonderful as what one can have when they have dementia or other severe health problems. Those at the bottom, they are insured against the worst possible outcomes, but these nursing homes that are often government provided, they are of somewhat lower quality. And of course, this is going to bring up issues of quality of care. Nursing homes, just to provide services for individuals who can't really walk on their own, that happens to be expensive. And so this does raise issues about these individuals at the lower end of the income distribution in terms of what types of care they're actually going to receive.
One thing that you raise in the paper as well is that we've been very proficient at making our lives longer, but we've given less analysis to the quality of the life in its later stages. But what really comes across, it's really hard to measure that. We know less about what the quality of life is and what end of life is to be able to make a determination about that.
That's right. It's easy to measure, for example, whether or not someone is alive or dead. It's much more difficult to actually measure whether or not individuals are feeling comfortable in their last few days. There are definitely surveys of patient care, patient satisfaction. And so there has been some interesting research done in terms of what types of care actually do provide improved patient satisfaction. But you're definitely right that that happens to be probably more modest than it should be, given that many of the elderly state that they care more about having a quality end of life rather than a longer life.
One thing that you pointed out, which hadn't occurred to me, is that if you were going to predict from a population of elderly people at the beginning of any year, which people are in the end of their lives, for some people, then yes, you can be pretty certain that they are or they are not. For a lot of other people, you cannot be certain at all. So it's very hard in advance to determine a standard of care that is appropriate.
That's absolutely right. So there have been recent papers trying to use machine learning, for example, to try to predict who is in their final year. And as it turns out, given U.S. Medicare claims data and literally thousands of variables to help predict who is about to die, it does wind up being incredibly difficult to figure out using state-of-the-art machinery to figure out who is going to survive another year. And if it's hard for a statistician, given millions of observations and thousands of covariates, it's hard for a doctor or especially a family to figure out how long these people are likely to live.
Give me your opinion on this, Eric. Is there a country that you've come across that you think has a particularly enlightened policy about this that seems to have it all sorted out? Or is it so subjective and relies so much on societal attitudes towards dying that we can't really determine this across different cultures, different countries?
I'm not sure that we know what country has it right. However, I do want to bring up the case of Germany. So in Germany, the family members of those who have severe health issues will often be paid by the government to provide care for that family member. Yes. Which, of course, makes a lot of sense to the extent that it keeps that family member out of a nursing home, which is expensive. Although, of course, there's the question of, would that family member have gone into the nursing home, or is this really just a transfer of the government to a family who would have provided the care anyhow? More research needs to be done in order to try and think about what methods can we use to keep the disabled at home with their families rather than in nursing homes. But that is at least one interesting case where a country is trying to do something about keeping families together rather than just sending people into a nursing home.
This really is an area in which creative thinking about policy, but also evidence-based policy, is absolutely vital to the way we're going to live in the future, isn't it?
Absolutely. And one thing about medical care is that very recently we have started to get much better data on medical care. So for a long time, we've only had very low quality survey information to help us try to understand the economics of late life savings, late life medical spending, and the like. Whereas now, for lots of different countries, we have administrative databases to help us do a somewhat better job to try and understand what seems to work and what doesn't.
Eric, very interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The paper we discussed today is called End of Life Medical Expenses, and the authors are Eric French, John Bailey-Jones, Jeremy McCauley, and Elaine Kelly. It's CEPR discussion paper 13913, if you like to look it up that way. It's full of surprises. I also mentioned a Vox talk with David Bloom based on the Vox EU ebook called Live Long and Prosper. That deals with many more aspects of aging and how policymakers should be responding. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. If you don't want to miss an episode, remember you can subscribe to Vox Talks on your podcast platform, and you can always find 10 years of Vox Talks now at voxeu.org/vox-talks.